Sounds great.
Okay. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our teleclass on Health, Beauty and Health for Moms, Lifestyle, Nutrition, and Cosmetic Approaches. For those of you who don't already know me, my name is Jennifer Rojas, and I'm the Operations Director and Blog Editor for Mommy Bites. We're really excited for this teleclass today. Our expert is fabulous, and I can't wait for you to hear from him. But before we do that quickly, just a little bit about the format and logistics of our classes, in case you're new to our teleclass series. You are all muted right now, so you don't need to worry about background noise, since we've got people calling in from all over the country. Occasionally, we have people calling in from all over the world. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, just sit back and relax, and don't worry about background noise. If you would like to ask a question during class, and we certainly encourage asking as many questions as you'd like, it's super easy. You'll see on your event landing page in the top left corner, there's an Ask a Question button. Simply click on Ask a Question, and a box will pop up for you to type in your question and submit it. We'll be monitoring and answering your questions throughout the class, so you can ask as many as you want, and you can put your name in or leave it anonymous. We are also recording the class, so you don't need to take notes. We'll send you all a link to the recording within a few days, along with some really great additional resources. So please do feel free to, again, just sit back, relax, and enjoy the call. So before we get started and I introduce our expert, I want to give a huge thank you to our sponsor of today's class, Cosmetics on Call. Cosmetics on Call is a program through which Dr. Alan Beanstock provides house calls for non-invasive cosmetic procedures. This exclusive program is offered to both individuals and groups in Manhattan and to groups of three or more in the other boroughs of New York City and Westchester, Long Island, and New Jersey. This aesthetic service is ideal for stay-at-home moms, for mothers who work from home, and for men and women with really demanding work schedules. And you can learn more at their website, which is www.cosmeticsoncall.com, and that is spelled C-O-S-M-E-D-I-X-O-N-C-A-L-L. So www.cosmeticsoncall.com. Our wonderful expert today is Dr. Alan Beanstock, who is an MD and has a master's in public health. He's a board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon and a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. He graduated from the prestigious Duke University School of Medicine. Dr. B also completed his residency at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. At the Texas Medical Center, the world's largest medical complex, he trained in various plastic and reconstructive disciplines, including microsurgery, cosmetic surgery, and breast reconstruction. Dr. B's specialties are body sculpting and body lifts for massive weight loss and bariatric patients, lip suspension, male breast reduction, post-pregnancy body contouring, and facial rejuvenation using both invasive and non-invasive approaches. Through body contouring procedures and with compassion and creativity, Dr. B provides solutions to those who seek to improve their health, appearance, and overall well-being. So we are delighted to have you here today, Dr. B. Why don't you give us a little bit more about your background and share a bit of your story and about yourself and how you got to where you are now?
So my first interest in plastic surgery started when I was about 12 years old, right before my bar mitzvah. I was watching a documentary with my mother about a plastic surgery, a plastic surgeon who was reconstructing a woman's face after she was in a severe car accident. And at that time, I was an artist. I told my mother at age 12 that that's what I want to do. My mom looked at me and said I was crazy. I said, well, it sort of makes sense. He's an artist. He sculpts, and he's good at science. So then about 16 years later, I graduated from my residency program in Houston. So I had the last laugh of my mother. It just felt like it was a natural fit. as one as an artist, painter, and sculptor, and being kind of a dorky, nerdy science person. It seemed like it was the right marriage of the two disciplines, and that's where I am today. I've changed my practice significantly. Now, the one thing I do have to say is my mother foresaw where plastic surgery was going to go about 11 years ago, and I should have listened to my mother being a nagging Jewish mother, that she gave great advice. She said, you need to understand injectables and non-invasive approaches. You just can't focus on 10-hour operations. And she was 100% correct in that. And she also said to me when I was a resident, she's like, you need to learn how to take care of these people who lose a lot of weight. And that's ended up being my kind of subspecialty as we speak today.
That is really, really an amazing story. And, you know, clearly you took, you know, something you were good at and melded that with this passion. And, you know, I know from having my own Jewish mother, you know, mothers are usually right. So let's get right into our questions, our Q&A. So tell us, Dr. B, what are some overall tips that you recommend from a lifestyle and nutrition standpoint? So, of course, there is the cosmetic approaches, but you are also very focused on lifestyle and nutrition as far as enhancing beauty and cosmetic results. So what are some tips regarding lifestyle and nutrition to enhance those results?
I really think that incorporating, you know, healthy eating habits as well as exercise and overall mental health practices are super important. I mean, I incorporate this even with my reconstructive patients. But I've noticed the biggest impact on the mothers that I take care of. Number one, they tend to be mothers that tend to be pretty healthy to begin with and are interested in being healthy for themselves as well as their family. And so the lifestyle components I try to incorporate, one, enhance cosmetic results, which is important, but more importantly, enhances overall health, which I think is important as a society. So things I focus on, number one, I always talk about sunscreen for sun protection. And it's generally not been an issue for our generation. It's more of our parents' generation that was very recalcitrant and resistant to using sunscreen. Two, smoking is a non-issue. I won't operate on a smoker, and the first thing I do with a patient who smokes is I give them two flicks, and I say, next week is your last cigarette. We all know that smoking is bad for the lungs as well as other health things, but smoking is very detrimental to beauty. And if you look at I always have people cracking up from my high school reunion. People that I always thought was the beauty of our class looks like she's 30 years older than her actual age because she's a chronic smoker. So that's something that's really important as far as it accelerates the aging process, really, really promotes wrinkles and a tired look. And I also make sure patients minimize alcohol. You don't have to be drastic like me and give up alcohol completely, but I do think minimizing alcohol consumption, meaning instead of, you know, one glass of wine a night is fine, but I've had both women and men who consume three or four glasses of an alcoholic drink for business purposes, and really that is just like almost cigarettes. It's a free radical. And it increases the aging process. Then after that, I kind of go into the more advanced things such as supplements and nutritions, which we can get into more detail if the audience would like to hear that.
Absolutely. And actually, you had mentioned, I see that there is a question that has come in from a caller. Thank you, caller, regarding sunscreen. So we know now, you know, we're more educated than the previous generation how important it is to protect ourselves from the sun. But do you have any recommendation in terms of, for instance, you know, my mother buys me like the 110 SPF. Is there really a significant difference between, say, the 15 or the 20 SPF and the 100 or 110?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I get that all the time from my patients. So in my opinion, this is not expert opinion, there's really no difference. The problem is what happens when we put sunscreen on and we sweat? It doesn't matter even if it's a waterproof sunscreen, it basically wipes off. So the key is, I don't think it's the 15 versus the 110 is a big difference. I think it's applying it on a regular basis. So we really have to be conscious of it every 2 hours putting sunscreen on. I discovered the perils of this. I decided to play tennis for 4 hours one day, and I put it on at 8 in the morning, and then I did not reapply it at 10 in the morning, and when I got home at 2 p.m. after having lunch, I was completely burnt, and I was using SPF 60. So I think really the concept is reapplying it on a regular basis. So I don't really think there's a huge difference between the 15 and 110. I think that's more of a marketing ploy, in my opinion. I just think it's applying it on a regular basis and lathering it up and covering all body parts.
Okay, thank you so much for clarifying that. And I see we got another question about, you know, you had mentioned about, you know, diet and kind of what you're putting in your body. And somebody, one of our callers, thank you, caller, has asked the question, what about, I've heard a lot about the benefits of apple cider vinegar. Can you expound on that? Why is that good for us? I keep seeing it's good, it's good, and you should have it, but why and how much and all of that?
That's an excellent question. That's one of my, I have a list I give all of my patients, and that's number 22, number either 22 or 23 that I have highlighted in red and in italics. So I'm a big apple fan of apple cider vinegar. My wife's cousin is actually the reason why we got together, is the one that introduced me to apple cider vinegar, ironically, and she's not a physician. It has really great health properties. They don't understand the true science behind it. Even though it's a vinegar and it's acidic, it theoretically somehow creates an alkalized environment, and it's very good for both minimizing bruising, wound healing. And I'll give you an example. I had a patient who ironically had a, we'll say, an infected wart on her foot, and she was seeing multiple dermatologists, and they were using liquid nitrogen. And I said, why don't you try something different? Why don't you soak your foot in apple cider vinegar for about 2 weeks, and let me know how it goes. Then we could do something. If it doesn't work or doesn't help, maybe we could do something more invasive. And this was my first experience before trying it on the face or any other arena. And I came back 2 weeks later, and she said it was completely healed. So I definitely think apple cider vinegar works. It's great for sore throats. And what I recommend for sore throats, if you have a sore throat, rather than run to your primary doctor and be on an antibiotic, try putting apple cider vinegar in warm water, not hot water. Put about 2 tablespoons and drinking it. And you can add a little honey, too, just to sweeten up. It's a little bit strong to adjust to, but it really does help with your immune system. I think the number one thing is it really it increases and galvanizes your immune system to really kick in, as well as minimize bruising and other inflammatory factors. So that's kind of my short on apple cider vinegar. I'm a big fan of it. On a daily basis, what I recommend is do 2 tablespoons in either warm or cold water. Now the key thing is because it's acidic, it can damage your teeth. So what I would do is drink it through a straw. That's kind of a little tidbit I learned. I've had some patients who are big apple cider vinegar fanatics, but they've not consumed it through a straw, and it's kind of slightly damaged their teeth, but then they switch to a straw.
Wow. And you had mentioned a little bit earlier on sort of one of the keys to kind of keeping your system in balance is to have foods that alkalize your body. And so
exactly.
you just mentioned that apple cider is actually acidy. So how does that work? Does it just kind of change its properties, like while it's outside versus inside the body?
Yeah, it's not really clear how it works. I've tried to do research on it. There's not enough out there on it. People just, it's more anecdotal, which unfortunately as a physician, that's not the greatest thing, but I've had enough experience with both my patients and people and colleagues who do use apple cider vinegar that it doesn't alkalize the environment in the body, but it decreases inflammation, which if you can decrease inflammation, you will lead to enhanced immune system. Will lead to enhance other processes as far as recovering from bruising, surgery, or even just overall good health practices. In general, I recommend people avoiding acidic foods. It doesn't mean you can't have like a little bit of a lemon, but mm-hmm. some of the foods that we eat are very, very acidic, particularly some of the bad oils we have and things like that.
Okay, great. That's wonderful, and just sort of confirms things that we've been hearing lately. And I know personally, I sort of changed my diet over the last year to a much cleaner, greener, more alkaline, and I just feel a whole lot better. So there must be something to it.
Absolutely. I mean, really, the Greek diet is probably one of the best diets of having natural vegetables, incorporating fish. I don't recommend a lot of red meat. I have no issue with chicken, even though I don't consume it myself. I just think it's really eliminating processed foods. It doesn't mean you can't have coffee. It just means you can't have 10 cups of espresso. More from a standpoint that you don't want to get dehydrated and to over rev your system with the caffeine. I really promote also a lot of, and I encourage people to have a lot of supplements, vitamin C, selenium, zinc. And instead of having normal water, there are several companies that sell alkalized water. I mean, they claim this to be a pH 10. Maybe I don't know if they're pH 10, but they definitely feel like they clean the system out better. I use it with my wife, and I've had a lot of my patients report a significant improvement using drinking and consuming alkalized water.
Excellent. Thank you so much for this really great information. So kind of moving on to some other types of approaches, and we can kind of get back to the nutritional stuff, the health and nutrition stuff later on. And of course, audience, just a reminder, please feel free to type in questions anywhere along the way, and we will get to them. So kind of moving into some other approaches for health and beauty, what would you say is the 101 for people who have never done injectables and non-invasive approaches, and also for those who may have but may not be aware of the current more advanced approaches?
So I always believe when I see a patient, I'll address the first issue starting with a brand new patient. I always encourage patients to start slowly first, because you never want to do something drastic. You kind of want to have a little bit of a warm-up. So that's number one. Number two is to do your research. Find out, you know, I always recommend people talk to their friends. Communication and transparency is always the best thing, not to be afraid to talk about with your friends. And generally, you get the best recommendations that way. And three, you know, doing your own research. I mean, a lot of my patients come in very, very well educated. Sometimes they've actually made suggestions to me to look up, and I've actually changed part of my own practice based on doing my own research from what the patients have sent me. Wow. So that's sort of an important thing. I mean, I think you have to look at it as a collaborative process, and I always try to do that with the patients. Patients sometimes will suggest things that maybe indirectly or directly will change or influence how I treat them and other patients. So I think that's very important, because there's so much information out there, and you have to figure out what's valuable and what's not. And as good as the internet can be, it can also provide a lot of misinformation as far as providing deals and shortcuts and things like that. So I think I recommend our audience, as well as my patients, to really do their homework, do their research. But the most important thing is to find a physician and provider that, you know, is going to listen to them and talk to them and provide different options, and to come up with get best game plan together. I'm never a big fan of being a dictator with patients. I really feel like it should be a team approach. Obviously, there are a small scenario of cases where the patient comes in with very unrealistic expectations, and this happens in any form of life. And those patients I generally don't treat, or I try to start very slowly on if I can get them to pursue a reasonable approach that will help them and be mutually beneficial.
Thank you for that. And that's very enlightening. And just to highlight that for the audience, really just communication is important, research is important, you know, coming in fairly well educated and having, you know, just open and transparent communication, and really just feeling, you know, has to feel like the right fit. And that's really important. So thank you for that, Dr. B. What would you say, excuse me, are the most commonly asked questions that you get from patients regarding non-invasive cosmetic surgery strategies?
So other than giving an overview, you know, other than giving a quick overview to my patients of like all the different forms of fillers and non-invasive injectables there are, most common questions I receive are, you know, how long is it going to last? Two, how long am I out of commission, or how much bruising is there going to be? And three, when am I going to need a surgery if this doesn't work? Those are kind of the common questions that I get from my patients once we've kind of journeyed into the injectable arena.
Okay. And so then what are some of the pros and cons, would you say, to each product or device that is available? Anything from fillers to lasers?
Right. So each one has their benefits, their pluses and their minuses. So the most common one that I deal with are the botulinum toxins, such as Botox and Xeomin. It's basically a neurotoxin that prevents the muscle from working, which means it paralyzes the muscle temporarily. So all those lines on your forehead or in between your brow, those are due to what we call dynamic lines due to muscles contracting. So if you can minimize the muscle contraction, you can prevent those lines from being so apparent. So that's the most common one. The negative is you can unfortunately paralyze muscles you want to paralyze, such as creating a droopy eyelid or droopy eyebrow, which if you're an experienced hand, that should happen less than 1% of the time. However, unfortunately, in the area of cosmetic surgery, we have a lot of non-plastic surgeons, non-dermatologists starting to do fillers as well as Botox injections, and they don't really have a good handle of the anatomy as well as the person's individual concerns and anatomy. Second one are fillers. That's probably the second most common that I, and there's a whole slew of fillers, from the hyaluronic acid fillers, such as I'm sure our audience knows about Juvederm and Restylane. There's Voluma. Then there's one more, it's a little bit more permanent, which is called Radius, which is made of calcium carbonate. That's a more long-acting one. It's a little bit more robust. Then we have Bellaterra, which is a shorter-acting, but it's more liquidy. All of these are very good. I use each one in different fashion. I'm not married to one product, because I think each product, just like any pigment on a palette, has its own purpose. The ones I don't use are the permanent ones, such as silicone and Artifil or Bellafil. Those tend to have complications, and if you run into trouble, you're kind of screwed as a physician and patient, meaning that sometimes you actually have to operate on a patient to remove these products. So those are ones I'm not a huge fan of. I know some physicians swear by them. I just feel like that most of my patients, particularly those in the metropolitan area, are more comfortable with, we'll say, the hyaluronic acid fillers, because at worst you can always dissolve them if you're not happy with the results. While the permanent ones, if it's an untoward or event or there's a complication, your only option sometimes is either waiting or providing a surgical excision.
Okay, this is very illuminating. Thank you. And I see we actually got a question in from our audience regarding types of fillers. And she says, you know, I'm a 45-year-old mom, and just in the last year, I've begun to notice more wrinkles on my forehead. She says, I tend to look pretty young for my age, but when I look at pictures of myself, I'm now seeing more and more wrinkles on the forehead. Is that something that would be addressed mostly by Botox or just some of the other ones you mentioned?
So that's one of the most common areas I address in mothers. And the typical mother I see is, you know, generally 38 to about 47. And the ones that I usually treat, areas I treat, are in between the eyebrows, or the 11s, or the angry look, and the forehead lines. And anyone, I'm sure, that's a mother has to take care of multiple children, and including their husband or partner. So that becomes basically three or four children, which creates a lot of stress, of course, juggling a house as well as juggling a job. So the forehead lines are very common, particularly both from aging and working hard as a mother. And usually the botulinum toxins such as Botox and Xeomin are the best options for that. Generally, I don't do many fillers on the forehead. There are certain times when you need to do that, but the most common injectable are the botulinum toxins such as Botox and Xeomin in that area.
Okay, and along those lines, I see another question came in specifically regarding Botox. Our caller says, I've heard so many different things about Botox. I know it's a poison. Can it be dangerous?
So that's a great question. Theoretically, it is a toxin. It's from Clostridium botulinum, which is a toxin. However, using it for medical purposes, there are many, we'll say, pernicious chemicals that are used for medicinal purposes, and this is one of them. Generally, it's not dangerous because you're doing it in low doses. There's a scientific report that was saying that botulinum can have systemic effects, meaning it can affect other parts of the body, but they did that in a rat or mouse model, which is really not a fair comparison, because you think about a rat as, you know, less than a pound, and they're using human concentrations on a rat or mouse. So there's been no documentation, as far as I know, that says it has any systemic effects other than being located to the area, such as the forehead, in between the brows, and so forth. And it was actually discovered about 20-plus years ago for something called blepharospasm, meaning people had a spastic eyelid. So it was actually used for reconstructive purposes first, and they discovered that it could be used for cosmetic intentions.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Dr. B, and thank you very much to those in the audience who are asking these great questions. Please, again, feel free to ask as many questions as you would like, and we will have them addressed throughout the class. And so, Dr. B, you had mentioned just, you know, for that last question about common areas that you address specifically with your mommy population. And, of course, our community here at Mommy Bites is a parenting resource. And so probably all of the folks on our call today are mothers. And so can you tell us a little bit more about that, about maybe more common areas that you address specifically with the mom population? And are there areas different from your other patients, or are these areas different from your other patients who are not mothers?
So I will actually start backwards on your questions. So
sure.
The moms generally are most concerned about the eye region, as well as kind of the wrinkles of the forehead and and the brow. My other women, I'm going to exclude men temporarily, are generally more concerned about the lips. That's generally the younger population I deal with are more interested in lip rejuvenation, and then my older population really feel that they're beyond help with the non-invasive approaches, even though I don't think that's true, and you usually like to pursue surgery. So as far as the areas in the mothers that I commonly address, so the number one areas are I call the angry look, or the 11s in between your eyebrows, because most of us are very intense. We concentrate and we make that kind of mean expression between our eyebrows, as well as the forehead. And the area when we smile, we have those crow's feet, which is right by the eyes. So those are the common areas I address in mothers. People, mothers from 32 to, we'll say, 50, you know, want to look a little fresher. They don't want to have those very prominent wrinkles. One thing I also see in a lot of my moms compared to my other moms, because the mothers are so involved with so many multitasking activities, and this is a compliment to you mothers, you don't have enough time to drink water. And most of the mothers I see, even though most of the mothers are very, very healthy and they have very good nutritional practices, most of the mothers I see don't drink enough water and don't have enough intake. So I really push both the moisturizers and the water, as well as other consumption, and minimizing your caffeine products as much as possible, and as well as alcohol beverage. So the areas I address, as I said, are the forehead in between the brows. That's usually done with Xeomin, which is like Botox. I tend to prefer Xeomin. I just think it's a little bit more basic, meaning it's less acidic and less painful. And then for the area around the eyes is kind of my favorite area to do. I did research and studies on this when I was a resident, and I feel like that's the area that really is kind of the sine qua non, or the telltale sign of someone aging. So yes. This is my favorite area to fill in, and I usually use Restylane in that area around the eyes. We call it the teardrop deformity. That's just a fancy word for the kind of a hollowed out look around the eyes. And then when women start to get older, where they have a thin face, people kind of will call it mid-face ptosis, or the cheek area kind of descends. And and I just did this on a 45-year-old mother last week, where the cheek kind of descends. You can add filler such as Voluma Radius to kind of plump up the cheek and give kind of the appearance of what we call mid-facelift, or elevating the cheek, and as well as the kind of the jowl area.
That's great. Thank you. And actually, it looks like we do have a follow-up question about that. One of our callers is asking the types of procedures that you're talking about now for moms. Are these temporary or permanent procedures?
So the fillers generally are temporary. They can last anywhere from 6 months to about a year. Volume and radius have known to last about a year and a half, even sometimes longer. But each product varies, and each patient responds differently. I had one patient who I did injected Restylane in the orbital area that we'll call the teardrop, the eyelid area. And the company says it only lasts a year. Her product lasted 2 years, and that's very unusual, but
wow.
Each one responds differently. I tend to steer away from the permanent products when it comes to fillers. If I want to have a more long-lasting result, I'll do something called fat grafting, which is taking the person's own fat and plumping the face or the cheek region up. But that's more invasive, and we could spend 2 hours even just talking about that, but I think that's beyond the scope of our teleclass for today.
Okay, great. And thanks for all the great questions, callers. So what would you say are special areas that can be addressed that we may not know about, or that most people believe require actual invasive approaches?
So one area that I enjoy doing that's not really talked about is there's a muscle that controls kind of your smile. I'm not going to go into the details of it too much, but people have kind of a downward smile. And unfortunately, that's due to both volume descent, gravity, and so forth. And there's a muscle that we can actually paralyze, which can create an upturned look. Now, the tricky thing is you can't do too much. Otherwise, you can make a woman have a joker smile. So you have to be really conservative and kind of tilt that smile up, and people look much happier and much more refreshed. I actually did this on my mom, even though my mom is significantly older than the Mommy Bites population, but it really does make a difference because she always looks like she's happy and cheery. And I oftentimes incorporate that with a little bit of filler around the lip area, and it really gives a nice volume. It gives much less of a kind of a downward, sad look to the smile and lip area. In addition, I've incorporated this in along the nose. So a lot of women have, you know, we'll have slight asymmetries on the nose, have slight defects, and really don't want to have a rhinoplasty or nose job. So I can use filler on the tip of the nose, as well as on the dorsum to kind of either create a straight nose or create more of a refined tip. And this is this is a slightly more advanced technique, so you just have to know how to do it and make the patient comfortable, but it really gets a very nice result. I had a mother who's a 36-year-old who has a slightly bulbous Mediterranean nose, and I was able to inject fill all over her tip and her nasal bridge near the eye region. And it really created a kind of a bumpy nose into a very nice straight flat nose. I mean, should be straight bridge. And it was able to give definition to her tip, so her tip was able to look less boxy and more refined.
Wow, that's actually really illuminating. Sure. I had personally had no idea that one could actually get some work on the nose done outside of a more invasive approach. That's really cool. And I see we do have another question from the audience. It kind of goes back to a little bit to the previous question about the common areas that you address with your mommy population. And she actually was wondering, when you referred to you see more of a popularity with lip procedures in the younger population, and she wants to know, is that because of shows like The Kardashians and other popular shows out there?
Yeah, she hit it right on the head. the pluses and the pernicious results of reality television has really promoted fuller lips, both for the good and the bad. And last week I had a 28-year-old come in with very full lips, and she wanted to have larger lips. And I basically politely kicked her out of the office because she was going to look ridiculous. I mean, there are times where I do see patients who have almost no lips, and those are good patients, and you have to inject a fair amount of filler. I just don't see it as much in the older population because they're not as focused on the lips as the younger generation is. It doesn't mean I don't do it on 35, 40, 45-year-old women. I think it's the craze of reality television and the younger generation, the millennials, that are more obsessed with having really full lips.
Okay, thank you for that, and thanks for the question from the audience. And so I think you might have actually addressed this previously, so tell me if you did, but I'd feel free to expound on this, about what your favorite areas on the face are to address.
So I think my number one area is that the orbital area, that what I call the teardrop, because I feel like, as I said, that's what is really the telltale sign of someone who's aging, a 25-year-old versus a 45-year-old, and it's a little bit more challenging. Unfortunately, you do get more bruising and swelling in that area because, if you can imagine, the eyelid area is very well vascularized, meaning there's a lot of blood vessels. And even if you're very gentle, and I use every technique possible to minimize bruising and swelling, such as arnica, icing, I have patients do turmeric, ginger, and so forth, as well as our patient's great question about apple cider vinegar, both before and afterhand. You still get bruising and swelling, but you do get a great result and a more refreshed look when you augment that kind of cheek and eyelid area. So that's my number one area. The second area I like to do is around the lip area, where we're talking about that smile. Using a little bit of fill around the lip just to kind of create an upward tilt of the smile and less of a frown. And then probably the third area is the mid-face and cheek region of kind of creating a cheek lift. Even though it's a little bit more challenging, you have to know when you're doing too little or too much. That's the sort of thing. And then the fourth thing I like to do is kind of the temporal area. That's kind of like near the hairline. And it's not uncommon with women who are in very good shape or thin kind of have a hollowed out area near their temple and scalp. And in addition to augmenting the cheek, you have to be very careful of not leaving that area hollowed out because you can look almost skeletonized in the what we call the temporal or scalp area. So incorporating different fills in that area to complement the whole face.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And actually, we do have another question from the audience. Going back to, you had mentioned, some of the other approaches, the lifestyle approaches, to health and beauty, and you had mentioned making sure we're all hydrated. And of course, it, like you said, it's really tough for moms often to stay hydrated and drink enough water. And the caller says, I've read, different amounts. What would your recommended amount of water be that we should all be drinking every day?
Generally, you can never drink too much water. If you're going to the bathroom, that's a good sign. I don't have an exact science on that. I mean, people talk about having 3 liters of water throughout the day. I think that's pretty reasonable. I don't think there's an exact science behind that. I honestly believe you should be, you know, you should drink enough that you're going to the bathroom probably every 2 hours. I know that may be a little bit cumbersome and burdensome for mothers and any individual, but I think that's kind of my science behind it. I'm not a big fan of, you know, having sugar water and things like that, because you're just adding unnecessary elements to the water itself. But really, you have to just force yourself, and I do this too. I carry water with me and other potables, and just force myself to drink throughout the whole day, because you really get dehydrated very quickly, particularly in New York City, where there's dry heat or dry air conditioning, which dries you out completely. So I didn't give
a direct answer to that,
unfortunately. There's no great answer. I mean, 3 liters is safe, but I think you can drink even more than that if you can.
Hey, thank you for that. And I know from a personal standpoint, when I kind of revamped my dietary habits about a year ago, a lot of it was about drinking enough water. And I heard a statistic that something like 75% of us are dehydrated, and that's alarming. So just, again, a note to the audience, drink lots of water. If there's any takeaway lots of water.
And also I'd like to say is increase a lot of good fats in your diet as well, because that will help you release in the other area as well. That's one thing, is everyone was focusing on a low-fat diet 20, 25 years ago. I've always felt that was kind of spurious and apocryphal, but I think having enough fat, one, lubricates your bowels, not to be inappropriate, but it does help release and helps having number twos, as well as releasing all the toxins.
Yes. And that's a lot of what it's about, is, you know, getting rid of those toxins that build up
exactly.
in our bodies, you know, through, even like you said, especially in a place like New York City, there's all, you know, toxins everywhere. So, you know, and again, to kind of piggyback on the lifestyle approaches and alternative approaches, what are your thoughts about some more alternative approaches, such as acupuncture or Reiki for anti-aging?
So there are several acupuncturists in New York City who claim they can do procedures that will simulate a facelift. I don't know if there's merit behind that. However, I do firmly believe in acupuncture and these alternative approaches that are more energy work, because the key thing is that they minimize stress and they create a more relaxed environment, and they change your chi and your force. So if you can do anything that helps you get to more of a balanced state, I think that will help with the beauty process and anti-aging, as well as keep you healthy, balanced, and grounded. So I do believe in those. I do acupuncture myself with my wife. I don't feel I look younger, but I do feel like I'm much more relaxed, which is another key component of remaining good health and beauty practices, is being relaxed and getting enough rest. So I think if all those things are incorporated, it will help with the overall picture of beauty. I can't prove or disprove whether acupuncture can simulate a facelift. My gut is it does not, unless it's incorporated with other things, but I think it's definitely a great complementary vehicle to our healthy practices.
Okay, that's great. And that just kind of underscores the idea that this is a holistic approach to health, beauty,
yeah.
nutrition. And so do you, in your practice, do anything unique that your colleagues may or may not do or offer?
So I think the holistic approach is one thing that I do. I don't think many of my plastic surgery colleagues, dermatology colleagues, really colleagues focus on the lifestyle approach. And as I said, I have a cheat sheet. I think it's in one of the PDFs that the audience will be able to get. I have a list of like 22 to 23 kind of supplements that are really helpful, such as omegas, vitamin D, I do B12 shots with all my patients. I really go over their whole lifestyle. I mean, patients are really disconcerted when they come in. Before we even talk about whatever they're concerned about from a health standpoint or a beauty standpoint, I'm going over what they're eating. And I really think, not to embrace the 18th century obsession with gut and bowels, I do think what we put into our body is very important. We all know that sugars are not good, but why they're not good? Because they create an inflammatory state. Sugar gets stored basically as fat, so that leads to weight gain. And it doesn't, you know, when you have a lot of sweets, what happens, you don't feel good. So the whole point is not just, I don't really focus on weight, I focus on being healthy. So I think, you know, really, I try to really enforce people to engage in a regimen that's realistic for them to pursue a healthy lifestyle. I go over exercise regime with patients. I mean, people say they exercise 3 times a day, but most colleagues don't ask, what are they doing? Well, walking is great, but walking is really not exercising because you're not sweating and raising your heart rate up. And I had one patient come in. She said, well, I have 10 minutes of sex with my husband every night. Well, that's great. I'm glad she has a great sex relationship. But that's really not like you have to really – she'd have to be doing it for a long time and doing it all the time. So these
not
are things
enough,
that
right? –
Yeah, exactly. So these are things that like I try to really probe and dissect in patients, both for my surgical patients, my non-invasive patients, and all in my reconstructive patients. And I think this is really one of the things I try to implement from a public health standpoint, because we focus on disease, and what's great about, you know, the mommy population is most the mothers that I deal with, they really want to focus on health, which is, I think, the right strategies. And what the best way of focusing on health and promoting health is incorporating healthy practices so you don't get sick. I don't even mention the word sick to my patients. I said, I want you to be healthy. And I think that's trying to shift the paradigm. And if you're going to feel healthy and practice healthy practices, you're going to be beautiful. That's kind of my ethos and my philosophy on things.
That's great. That's a very important message. And kind of to follow along there in terms of mothers specifically, are there other practices and or services that you offer specifically to moms?
Well, I have a house call service, which was actually conceived by one of my patients as a mother who said to me, you know, you could do this in hotels or people's homes because we're all busy. We don't like to wait in a doctor's office with a screaming child. And that's kind of when the birth of this came about. And one of my patients actually came up with a variation of the name Cosmetics on Call. I came up with the modification of it. So that's why that's an example of where I'm actually listening to my patient population. I really saw there was a need to really help mothers because particularly in the Northeast, I haven't really in the metropolitan areas, people are busy. People are juggling businesses. They're juggling their families. They're juggling their husbands, their children. And they don't have time or the patience to set up an appointment. So I designed Cosmetics on Call really to meet the needs of my patients, particularly the mothers, because they feel it's great if they can have one or two mothers over when they have an hour break in between, you know, school or playtime with their kids, and I can help them, and they're more relaxed in their own home. It's less stress for them, and they don't have to worry about, you know, booking an appointment 3 weeks in advance or waiting in an office.
That's amazing. I mean, that's really kind of cutting edge, pardon the pun, but just as far as, you know, having moms be able to do this and feel comfortable and try to fit it in and feel better about themselves. And real quick, before we run out of time, I really want to, again, thank Cosmetics on Call for putting together this highly informative, enlightening teleclass. Their sponsorship of today's class continues to allow moms from all over the country and, in fact, all over the world to take our classes for free. So, Dr. B, getting back into your house call services, how might you translate this into other house call services since moms are so busy, especially in the New York area?
Yeah, so my main goal is kind of lead – Cosmetics and Call to other house call practices. Really, the house call model is not new. This has been around for decades. It just kind of fell out of favor based on convenience. And I think really understanding patients' needs and their schedule, as well as seeing what actually goes on in the home. That's one of the main reasons why I do this. I think I can implement more change in the house if I'm going to a mother's house or mother's home or apartment to see how they're living, to see what they're eating, and really, it's a more comfortable environment for both the patient and myself. I think I do better work in the home because the patient's at their most relaxed, honest, and true self. So the next phase is that I'm doing is a house call program for kids, which is applicable to busy moms when a child falls off a swing or is in the park at Central Park or some other park and they fall and they have a cut. Moms are often confronted by, what do I do? Well, the natural tendency is, you know, run to the emergency room. So I'm designing a house call program where moms and dads don't have to take their children to the emergency room. They can call me and I can come to the house, evaluate the child, and actually perform services, whether it be, you know, stitches, laceration, or just an evaluation. So they minimize the aggravation of waiting in an ER, wasting several hours, waiting for a plastic surgery when they only will get a resident or an emergency room physician. And really calming the child down. Both children and parents, I think, will be more calm staying home and being evaluated at home rather than have to be waiting in a noisy, non-clean environment such as a hospital ER.
Wow, that is really, really fantastic. What a great idea. So you all have been really great audience. You've sent in wonderful questions. We know that Dr. Beanstock has gone over a wealth of terrific information today. So a huge thank you, Dr. B, for your wonderful expertise. You are clearly not only a true expert, but also very passionate about this topic and really offered kind of this wide array of approaches to health and beauty, and that was really valuable. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And just as a reminder, we'll be sending out a link to the recorded teleclass within a few days, as well as some really great additional resources from Dr. B. So have a great day, and we hope to connect with you again soon.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. B.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ross.